It's 8:17. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. As we reported, the Summit County Council met yesterday in the studio. With a recap of that meeting, I have Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Good morning. Thanks for joining us again.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well. Kim or Chris couldn't join us, so thank you. Let's see. The council consensus was that you will exercise an option to acquire a unit there on North Oslo Lane. This is a unit at Bear Hollow that was supposed to be affordable, but somehow became a market rate unit?
Yeah, I think, you know, what happened out there is that this was one of the earliest experiments in affordable housing and how to deal with it. And I think generally there are about 60 affordable units or deed restricted units out there, not affordable. Some of those have escalated in price. There's a 3% allowance for appreciation. But beyond that, I think the restrictions that don't require the owners to live in them, that allow them to be rented even on a nightly rental basis, and perhaps a failure to enforce the deed restrictions have led to some abuses, I think, over time. And I think some of those units aren't working the way they once were. There are opportunities from time to time to buy some of these units when they come up for sale, and I think that's what's happened here. It's a unit for, I think, about $289,000, if I remember correctly. And the notion is, should the county buy it? Should we buy it in partnership with Mountainlands Community Housing Trust, take it off the market, maybe strengthen some of those deed restrictions and then put it back on the market and sell it back so that we put it back in the pool with better controls on it. So as you've seen us do with other affordable housing, restrictions on who can live there, who can live in the unit, are they local, are they working in the community, do they meet certain income levels to be satisfied, to be eligible.
So this was our fault. I mean, we just didn't, the deed restrictions just weren't tough enough when they were first approved.
Yeah, and I would hesitate to put fault on it. I think, you know, when you start these programs, you go in with good intentions, you put in certain rules and regulations, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't, and you make adjustments. And that's how we've gotten to where we are on our current deed restrictions.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about how maybe the homeowner association dues have also kind of pushed these units out of affordability.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge. You know, as I think they said, in some cases, the homeowners association dues can be $500 a month, and that's pretty pricey for people that are. That's almost what people are paying for affordable housing. That's half of, you know, a 60% or 70% affordable unit at $500. So that takes it completely out of affordability. So I think we have to watch those. I think as we look at which of those units may be suitable for us to buy and what we might do with them. Part of the discussion was, do we buy a unit at that price and hold it for county employees and make that available as an option if we're trying to recruit somebody and we're in competition, because a lot of our employees can't live in the county either.
Mm-hmm. So did you guys decide what you were going to do, whether you acquire it or kind of jointly with Mountainlands Community Housing?
I think we're still going to look at how that might be structured. But right now the notion was, let's go ahead with it and figure out how we're going to do it as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. And if you, in fact, then buy it, then you're liable, or we are, paying those homeowner association fees, yeah?
Yep. But I think, you know, at this particular unit, I'm not sure. There are different areas within that Bear Hollow complex with different homeowners association fees. Some are lower, some are up there at that $450, $500 end.
So apparently you were told 8 or 9 more units could become available. What are you thinking in terms of the future? Do you have to make case-by-case decisions on each of these?
I think we will. You know, one of the proposals from Jeff Jones yesterday is, or from Scott Loomis, was maybe instead of using the 450 or 60,000 that we currently have in our fee and lieu bank that's been paid in to buy 1 or 2 units, do we use a lesser amount, partner with Mountainlands Housing Trust, and take some of these units as they come up, pay down the mortgage just to make them affordable again and roll them back in? And I think the devil's in the details on those kinds of structures. We'd have to see what that looks like, who has control of the property, what the ownership looks like, what the restrictions look like. There are a lot of details that would go into that, but that's a possibility too. So rather than buying 2 units, could we then buy multiple units for the same amount of money? you know, I guess we have to look at whether we can recoup some of that money. Are there ways for us to replenish the fee in lieu fund by doing that? There's still a lot of questions about getting into that kind of business.
Yeah. So the county has first right of refusal on any of these units?
I don't think we do. Jeff was under the impression, I think, that we did. Scott indicated that he doesn't think that we have a first right of refusal. Typically, people that that own those units will often approach Mountain Lands and say, you know, we'd like to sell this. The deed restrictions, the sale restrictions, I think, put them in a situation where they may want to give back. For some reason, they come back on the market and there's an opportunity given to either Mountain Lands or the county to buy them.
Yeah, but I guess the question then is, if we don't act quickly, then you lose the opportunity, yeah?
Yeah, and I think that's why we're buying this one. I think this one's, you know, they're never a no-brainer, but this one seems like a good opportunity at this price to at least take it off, tighten up the deed restrictions, and probably put it back on.
All right. Let's see. The appeal on the Commons at New Park hearing went almost 2.5 hours. And I know that you can't comment much because you're certainly in the middle of deliberations on this. But you did challenge the appellants, telling them if they want to make their case, they need to show the council some clear language in the New Park approval. About what specifically?
Well, I think one of their arguments was that because this particular parcel is on what Redstone Boulevard, which is now called Main Street, that there are certain restrictions that are associated with properties on Main Street. And I don't think we had a very substantial packet yesterday. I think we had 12 or 1,400 pages that we had to get through, and much of it was this particular appeal. So for most of us, we did not have the opportunity to do as deep a dive into the development agreement and the design standards that are applicable to the New Park area. So when somebody is telling us that something says something, we just would like to have some backup and clarity as to what they happen to be referring to. And I think we each want to do our own review of the documents themselves. You know, the biggest challenges I think that we have as a council is when these particular matters come before us that are based on development agreements. You know, if it's based on zoning, on county zoning, we know that well. But these development agreements can be very complicated. They have, unique language. This one, in terms of the market conditions clause, is just different than things that we look at normally, and the flexibility built into this. So it's a bit of a complicated beast, and we're going to have to do our own research. But again, since they were making those kinds of arguments, we just wanted them to come back with some sort of backup.
Yeah, I mean, is the language, I mean, just being that it's left up to interpretation? Is that what we've got going on here?
I'm not sure that it's left up. Well, there is a lot of interpretation. But again, Utah state law says essentially that if a landowner wants to do something on their property, unless there's a specific prohibition against it, you have, and it's got to be plain language that prohibits it, you're kind of obligated to go along with it. And we're stuck with that. That was codified by Utah state law last year, 2017, at the end of the legislative session. So we're in a position where whenever we're looking at these kinds of issues, you know, and I think this is one because of where it's located. It's next to the plaza in New Park. It's right adjacent to the amphitheater. It's going to be a large building adjacent to it. So you do get that kind of public outcry and input on those kinds of things. And you know, the public believes that the legislative body has the right to just protect the public in terms of protecting those kinds of iconic areas. And the unfortunate part is if someone is entitled to do something, state law says you have to let them do it, subject to any plain language restrictions. So,
well, it sounds like this would be a great parcel, I mean, for the county to purchase, given it being the iconic sacred cow that it is. Is there an opportunity to do that?
You know, when we have an appeal before us, I think inappropriate for me to talk about trying to buy something.
You may also take a field trip to the New Park Hotel. What would you be looking for?
I think just generally to look at, you know, there are arguments about how this fits into the overall themes of that town center, to the vision of that town center and how it should work. So if just based on arguments that were made, I think it's useful for us to travel as a group, both the appellants and the developer and the county manager and just see what it looks like on the ground as we make the decision.
All right. Let's see. The county also approving the bond for improvements at the Utah Olympic Park and the speed skating oval in Kearns. We went ahead and finally did this after several months of...
And I think they were trying... It was the delay, I think, was on the Legacy Foundation side. They were trying to get some terms worked out with the ultimate financier of the project. And, you know, initially, I think the bond was going to be secured by revenues, and now it switches going to be secured by real estate that the Legacy Foundation owns. So, again, this is kind of a no-brainer for us. It's under the Utah Facilities Act. It allows counties to essentially function as a pass-through bonding entity for these kinds of facilities. The county's credit is not at risk. The county has absolutely no responsibility for any kind of repayment of the bond. Those repayments will be secured by the real estate.
And that's what would happen. If they defaulted, you would just take over the real estate, sell it, and pay the bonds off.
I suspect the bondholder would take over the real estate. I think the county is just a pass-through entity.
Okay. Anything else from yesterday's meeting?
You know what? I guess just to let folks know to look for the kind of farmer's market that the health department is going to put on twice in August, once in September. And it's a great partnership with the hospital, with Summit Community Gardens, with a number of other entities, Taggy Farms and a few others, that will make fresh fruits and vegetables available at this market. They can be purchased using SNAP proceeds. I think that's a huge deal. There will be cooking demonstrations. There will be health assessments. And, you know, it's just one of those things that the health department does to help keep a wide variety of us in the community healthy and help us understand what we should do nutritionally. So I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. Hey, have you guys gotten any updates with regard to the Klein-Dolly parcel that the county purchased?
No, I think Jeff Jones is still looking at that from an affordable housing standpoint. We're also looking at both Klein-Dolly and, you know, if we ultimately close the our purchase on the Gilmore property, we're going to have two pieces of property that the county controls. And I think it's appropriate for us to look at our needs. What are the county needs? Everything from senior housing to a senior facility to back-of-house public works facilities, and see if they fit and what may fit on either one of those parcels. So doing that kind of assessment seems to be a great first step before we start saying do this here, do that there. So yep. We're in the middle of that process.
Well, there's also talk about a need, a cemetery. Have we ever found a place for that?
You know, there doesn't seem to be an urgency for it right now. We've had those conversations, and, you know, I don't think our death rate has gone down, but there doesn't seem to be an urgent demand for that, so it's not an active discussion that we're having.
All right, Roger, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Planning Commission got a look inside and on top of the new Kimball Garage Special Event Center at its meeting yesterday. In the studio with her takeaway, I have the chair of the Planning Commission, Melissa Bland. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you were joined by other planning commissioners and some of the public for a tour. What were you looking for specifically?
You know, it's just really helpful when you're looking at an application to walk around the space and see what the mitigations are. It actually was pretty helpful to do that. I think there's more of a buffer than I would have imagined. When you're looking at something on paper, it's just almost impossible to tell without walking around the property.
Yeah, and certainly you have all admitted that you're not experts with noise or traffic. So how was that tour helpful in understanding some of the impacts that you need to try and mitigate?
Yes, we are definitely not experts, and that's where the staff comes in, because they'll be looking much more closely, as will we, at the mitigations, but again, just touring around. So on the rooftop deck, there is space between the edge and the rest of the deck, and then there's what's left of the double barrel roof there. All of those things actually probably will contribute to the sound. They showed us where the sensors will be for the noise and the doors that don't stay open. And so it really was actually pretty helpful.
Yeah. So the couple of folks that we spoke to said that after seeing those mitigation efforts, it really didn't change their minds. What about you? I mean,
that remains to be seen, actually. Again, there's more. There's, I think the mitigations are more helpful than, sorry, I'm not really saying that very well. I think it definitely is going to remain to be seen, but it's helpful to walk around on the roof and just see that there's some separation between that and the neighborhood. And that's really what we were looking at.
Yeah, would it have helped us to have some music up there?
I don't know, honestly. I mean, I don't think that was really the point of the tour yesterday, because we would still have to have the sensors in place. The sensors aren't in place. We would have maybe somebody, a neighbor, standing out on their deck and seeing if they can actually hear the music out there. So I don't think we're quite to that stage yet. Again, it was just getting more of a feeling for the space.
Right. And it is within the commercial district, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. So if the applicant decided to turn it into a restaurant and had outdoor dining, I mean, would the requirements for mitigation change at all?
It actually, in a restaurant, isn't allowed use. So we are being much, much more strict on this because it's conditional use for this private event space. But the impacts are actually a lot different with a restaurant as well. You have people coming and going at different times. You'll have two or three people sitting in a group talking to each other. Whereas if you've got a large group and people are drinking, it's a different kind of an atmosphere. So I think the impacts are going to be bigger on a project like this than they would with a restaurant.
Yeah. Now there's only one entrance for the public and caterers and other staff to enter off of Heber Avenue, which raised some concerns about traffic since we've already got kind of a narrow road there at Heber. Has the applicant provided any mitigation for that?
What they do have is a very large storage area downstairs. So hopefully, the idea behind it is that when they've got events, they can keep a lot of the tables, chairs, things like that. They can load in at the proper times where it's not busy. It's not 6 o'clock at night and people are coming to Main Street for dinner. They can hold on to that down there, and then they've got an elevator to move it back and forth. So that should mitigate it. How much remains to be seen, but I think that's definitely helpful.
All right. And then also another concern asked, a question asked during the tour had to do with the lighting at night and if the windows would be darkened. What are we going to see? I mean, you just be able to see right in?
No, actually, again, the deck is set back. And when you are standing on the deck, you actually cannot see most of Main Street or Sweet Alley. So it's pretty effective. There's the double barrel roof. Now, when you're looking up at the houses, that might be a different deal. Hard to say exactly how much light is going to be shining out from that, but it is also the historic district, so we've got a fair amount of light there anyway. The outdoor lighting needs to be downcast, and I think we will be looking at that pretty closely.
All right. What's the timeline on this?
I think they're hoping to be up and running by winter. I mean, they were laying tile yesterday. The space looks pretty close to finished. So I know a question was asked by one of the commissioners whether they hope to have a private event there for Sundance, and they said they certainly do hope to be up and running by then. So I think sooner than later. Obviously, the mitigations are going to be key. Yesterday, we were just touring, and once we didn't actually look at any – again, we visually looked at their mitigations, but we didn't look at the actual plan, and staff is going through that with them pretty, you know, as much as they possibly can. So
this comes back, I mean, for a final approval, or appeal on that you're
have it continued until September 22nd. I don't know if that's for a final action or not. Again, I think that's really going to depend on the applicant, the mitigations, how comfortable we can get as a commission with the mitigations. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get a carte blanche. Yes, you can have events every day here for the rest of time. I mean, I would imagine that we're going to have some kind of a temporary approval, if that's indeed what we do, that lets us see how things go and maybe make some more mitigations if necessary.
All right. During the regular meeting, you looked at a couple of applications for 875 Main Street. This is a residence that wants a rooftop common area with a kitchen, a fireplace, and a jacuzzi here. So this is kind of an interesting request here because it's a residence, but it's within the commercial district?
It is, and it's actually in the historic recreation commercial district, but thanks to an agreement back in the 80s and 90s, the city put it, it's more historic commercial, and it's outside of the zoning. That agreement allowed it to stay outside of the zoning at the time and any future zoning. But this is 16 residential units. It's the Lift Lodge condominiums, basically. And so they're nightly rental. There could be people who live there. I don't think so. Mostly they're second homes and nightly rentals. And they don't have any really effective common area space. They also have a couple of commercial. The commercial will not be allowed to use this. This is just for the use of the residents, the guests, and invitees.
So how is this any different than from the special event space?
Totally different because it's really 820 Park Avenue is a great example, which this borders. They have a rooftop deck there. They have a barbecue. They have a hot tub. So it's basically a condominium project that wants some common area space. And we did spend a lot of time with the Red Lines on that yesterday, making sure that it's not too onerous for the people around it.
Okay. Did you make a decision on it?
We did. We did. We, like I said, we spent some time on the Red Lines. We no amplified sound, 49 people. It would have actually probably had, if I recall, maybe triple the amount of people it would be allowed for the actual space up there, but we capped it at 49. I mean, with 16 condos, there really shouldn't ever have any more than that. No outside commercial activity. There's lighting. And so we just tried to really tighten that up so that it didn't become a nuisance to the neighbors. But most of the time up there, it should just be, you know, a couple of guests in a hot tub and maybe the average barbecue.
So was that a recommendation or is that an approval from the Planning Commission? Does it have to go to City Council? Or
that one, I believe, is a CUP. So I think it was an approval.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Nope. I think that's it. We've had some nice short meetings, and it's been nice after Treasure to have that.
Okay. Melissa, thanks.
Thank you.
Band is the chair of the Park City Planning Commission. It's 8:42. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Park City Recreation is offering kids of all ages fun in their own front yard. The city rolling out its new mobile recreation trailer in the studio with details. I have Park City Recreation Manager Ken Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us what a mobile recreation trailer is.
Yeah, so the idea of this is that we have a 6x12-foot cargo trailer that is filled with all sorts of recreational amenities and games, everything from cornhole, bocce ball, to arts and crafts, to footballs, playground balls, you name it. We'll try to get it in there. And the idea is that we will bring the trailer to various locations around town, and kids or even adults can just show up and use the stuff that's in the trailer to play. So really it's a way for us to bring recreation to the public.
So do you have a staff person that organizes it or just a staff person that drives it and opens it up?
So currently we're doing it with staff that we already have. It's really been a project of mine, so I've been taking this on. I will be there probably through the fall at each time. Then I've got another staff person that is interested in helping. But really, in an ideal world, we would just bring it there, staff would be there, and kids would self-organize. I know that may be really a pipe dream, so I know that we will, you know, have to say, hey, let's get a game of kickball going. Let's, you know, you guys want to throw the football around. Here's football. Here's street hockey stuff. So we'll be there to supervise, but it's not highly structured or, you know, highly supervised play.
Yeah. So this was done with money that you had received as part of one of the social equity grants. Is that it?
Well, the city did a social equity challenge this spring, and I submitted this as a project, and I actually didn't receive funding for it. And really the reason for that was one of the criteria was you couldn't have ongoing expenses. And obviously this does with staffing and also, you know, purchasing new supplies each year. But the mayor and city council were very supportive of it. And I got a call about the middle of June that said, hey, it looks like you'll have some money left in your budget. Why don't you, you know, just start this and try to get it going. So I started around the 15th of June, and we've got the trailer all logoed and loaded up and ready to go.
Okay, so it hasn't rolled out yet. Where's it going first?
Okay, so we're going to do a grand opening on Tuesday the 14th of August, that's next Tuesday. We'll be at City Park from 10 o'clock to noon. At 11, there'll be some members of the City Council and the mayor that will come and do a ribbon cutting and hopefully play some games.
Okay, and then from there, where do you go?
Then on the 16th, we'll be at same time from 10 to 12 in the morning. We'll be over at the Park City High School softball field. And then that following Tuesday, the 21st, we will be at Aspen Villa.
Okay. Dan, now, people make a request for you to come to their neighborhood?
We could certainly do that. I mean, this is going to be a fluid project based on demand. I could see where this trailer could evolve into something where, say, the Prospector neighborhood wanted to have a block party and they needed some equipment that we could rent that out to them and deliver the trailer, you know, on a Friday and then pick it up on a Sunday. So really, we're really starting with the kids and trying to engage them and, you know, bring the play to them.
All right. So, and this is before school starts. So, again, the Aspen Villa would be 10 to noon as well.
Correct. And then our plan is once school starts, that we'll be at McPoland on Fridays from 12:30 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Again, right when those kids get out of school, giving them an option to, instead of, you know, going home and getting on Fortnite, or that they could come out and do whatever they want to do in terms of games. And certainly the kids that show up will be very, very influential in saying, hey, you know, why don't you get X, you know, this item? We'll probably go get it, right? Because I'll be honest, you've got a 55-year-old guy that was, you know, buying stuff, so.
Okay. All right. Again, so we're rolling it out. Again, next Tuesday, it'll be at City Park, 10 to noon. People can come by and have a look and see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm really excited. If I just have another moment, I mean, this is a project that was modeled after Boise, Idaho. They have a very successful program with several vans that travel all around Boise. And they will, in the summer, run from 12 in the morning till 7 o'clock at night, you know, a couple hours at all these different locations. And, you know, I really like the concept, because now for someone to participate in any of our programs, they need to go online and sign up, or they need to come to the mark, and usually there's a fee attached to it. This is really an opportunity for people to come out and recreate at no charge, and for us to hopefully make some connections with the community.
Right. Got to ask you, how are the pickleball and tennis players getting along these days?
I think they get along pretty well. We've done, I say all the time, it's very similar, I think, to the relationship between skiers and snowboarders when snowboarding started, where, as you'll remember, snowboarding wasn't allowed here at PCMR, and then there were certain runs. So we're in about probably that third phase of that now, where now we've got pickleball playing next to tennis players outdoors, and we try to control it somewhat, but overall it seems to be working pretty well. We have a strong group of pickleball players this time of year.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, it's just been a great summer, and I appreciate everyone's support, and look forward to getting the Mobile Rec trailer going.
Okay. Ken, thanks for coming by. Yeah. Ken Fisher is Park City Municipal's Recreation Manager. You're listening to the Local News Hour. It's 8:50. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, registration for Get Out and Play and Activate, the Youth Sports Alliance's after-school programs for elementary and middle school students, opens August 20th in the studio. With details, I have Heather Sims. She's the after-school programs director for YSA. Steve Camp is principal of South Summit Middle School, and Nicholas Hess is director of Park City Rowing. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Heather, let's start with you. I mean, this is something that has been added over the last couple of years, trying to reach out to some of the older students.
So this is now going into our third year. And, you know, last year we added Treasure Mountain to the program, which had already been pretty successful with Ecker. And we realized that also down in South Summit, we have an area that needs activities on their early release days. So I reached out to Steve Camp, who's the principal at South Summit, and we are excited to announce that South Summit will be part of the Activate this year. Their registration is actually open because they go back to school earlier than the Park City School District. And it's for their program, their middle school is 5th to 8th grade. And so we are going to be providing sports and lifestyle activities on their early release days. So, yeah, it's exciting. Treasure Mountain, we were able to offer later entry sports like skeleton and rowing, hence why Nick is here. And Ecker, we're again offering more diverse activities. New organizations are wanting to be part of the program and give children a chance, or I say children, they're teens and tweens, a chance to take part in their activities and try something new.
Yeah, so are you surveying the kids to find out what they want to do?
We do. We do survey the kids. And it's it's interesting, especially with that teen and tweens. It's very much about who's doing it and whether their friends are doing it. But if they, a lot of those kids already have activities on the weekends. And so what we found is, you know, they might not be interested in sports, but they might be interested in doing arts and photography and youth theater. So even though with the Youth Sports Alliance, we're really trying to cover everything that the kids want to do and give them a chance to try something new.
Sure. So, Steve, when is early release then for the middle school?
We have early release on Friday, and so mm-hmm. the students are out at about 1:15, 1:20, right in there.
Yeah. So was that something that you reached out or that YSA reached out to you?
No, actually, Heather contacted us, and we appreciate her reaching out to us. But we sat down, Heather, with myself and my vice principal, Kenna Wright-Alch, and we just listened to the program, and we just embraced it because it's good for our students. It provides that supervision and good wholesome activities for them, and it's a benefit to parents where we get out of school early that day.
Yeah, so what programs are you going to be offering there at South Summit?
Well, our facilities are accessible to about any program that we come up with, but immediately we're going to be part of the biathlon, and then there at the school, the youth theater. Those will be the two initial sports or activities that we get involved with and then have opportunity to branch out from there.
Right. So with the biathlon, you'll have, what, roller skis? Is that how it's going to work?
Well, the students will actually, that sign up for the biathlon, will get on the bus with the students from the rest of the county, and we go over to
Soldier Hollow.
Okay, so it'll be a winter program.
Actually, it's going to be in September. But what they do is kind of, it's not roller skis. They really just do sort of running, but it's about controlling the breath and controlling the use of the rifle, etc. So they do fun relays, and it's really kind of fun event. And then hopefully we'll be able to join the winter program later on in the season.
So was it the school district then that paid for the coordinator, or is that something that YSA has taken on?
The YSA pays for the coordinator. We try not to burden the district with anything other than using their facilities for like arts rooms or the T9 chef, that type of thing. So we want to make it as easy as possible for everybody, including the parents, the district, we try and take care of everything.
Yeah. And then with the youth theater, they also take a bus then and what, come to the Egyptian? It's done right there.
Yeah.
That'll be done right there at the school or in our auditorium.
Okay. Yeah. Is it done from the Egyptian Theater's youth theater group?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. What kind of response have you had?
Well, we don't know the response because the registration just opened and I don't know the results yet.
Yeah.
And we have a little bit of advertising to do as parents come to register their students, and we have back-to-school night and then get some of the social media out there.
All right. And then, as Heather mentioned, Nicholas, Treasure Mountain offering a four-week introduction to rowing. This is with the Park City Rowing Academy. She called it a later entry sport. What does that mean?
It is a later entry sport because the other programs that Heather is spearheading, those are for younger kids, and a rower needs to be in their teen to be able to withstand the strenuous sport rowing is the cores are not ready when they're 8 years old, so they should be 13, 14 years old, which is right around the activate age. That makes them eligible for the sport and not damage them for their future.
Yeah. So this is going to be held at Treasure Mountain. You have, what, rowing machines? Or are you going to actually take them out and do some rowing on the Jordanelle? Or?
Yes. Actually, we have them join at the Jordanelle and actually take the boats out and experience the real rowing.
So is there some training done off? Out of the boat first, or they just get into the boat and it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, huh?
Yes, and that's actually the true meaning of that Activate program is to just have them get a snapshot of what that sport could be. And last year when we held it, it was a lot of fun. The kids or the teens looking at the equipment going like, well, this is going to carry 8 people. That's and it's that long and stuff like that. And it's truly amazing how kids can be excited for something that they haven't seen before. They have been interested but didn't have access to. And for us, it's just a great opportunity to expose ourselves, as well as it is a really good way of expanding the program for Activate.
Sure. So each of the boats then have it's room for 8 people?
There's many different boats. So I have about 8 boats that I can put the athletes in, and the largest one, you know, as the Olympic class, is an 8 that takes 8 rowers and one coxswain, the one that steers the boat and yells at everybody. and then it goes down to a 4, a double, and a single. So we have all those boats available to us, and all the kids are actually, that's one of my goals, to have them introduced to all ways of rowing. So they row the single, they row the double, the 4, and the 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so is that what that 4 weeks includes, and just really an introduction to all of the boats and,
yes,
and technique, huh?
Yeah, there is rowing is really a technical sport, so hoping that they're going to come out Olympians after those four weeks is not possible, but at least, I mean, for me in specific, it's really important to see that they have a chance to look at something that they wouldn't be able to, and maybe they'll pursue it later on.
All right, Heather, where do people find out more information about that?
So they can go to our website, which is ysaparkcity.org, and under the programs is the Activate, and as the Park City District, the registrations for both the Get Out and Play and Activate will open on August 20th, but the South Summit is already open.
Okay. Heather Sims, Steve Camp, Nicholas Hess, thanks. KPCW News Time.